Hello, everybody. Cal Banion here with Cal Banion's Hypnosis Etc. with Meredith Locker. If you're watching this video anywhere except calbanion.com, you want to go there now because right down below this video on calbanion.com, you know, we got extra resources, links, graphics, all that kind of stuff that add value to the video you're watching. By the way, on calbanion.com, we have over 100 videos just like this, which go into just a myriad of different topics for the person who is a hypnotist or a hypnotherapist in the profession. Now let me tell you about Meredith Locker, my co-star, co-host. Before she became a 1%er hypnotherapist working in Los Angeles, she was a talk therapist, a regular old talk type therapist that would talk. But we changed all that when we converted her to hypnotherapy, and now she is a 1%er five path. And I tell you what, if I knew someone that wanted to do hypnosis or hypnotherapy in the Los Angeles area, she would be my definite number one choice. How you doing, Meredith?
I'm doing great, Cal. How are you?
I'm so hot. I mean, awesome.
Hot now that you rode 109 miles on your bike.
I know. Hey, I just found out there's a century ride out there in Palm Springs, but I don't think I'm going to be able to make it because of my trip to Malaysia.
Yeah, wow. And it would be a better time of year to do it. I mean, talk about hot. Oh my gosh, there's like, what, a couple months out of the year when it's then cold?
Yeah, that's why it's in February.
Yeah, exactly. Well, if you guys don't know who Cal is the trainer of trainers. Cal is the man who developed Five Path, and he developed Seventh Path Self-Hypnosis. He's the author of many books, and he is the internet guru who keeps teaching us more and more about marketing. And gosh, I mean, I don't even know where to start with that. He's got such a long list of involvement on the internet. He blows my mind. He's definitely my mentor and somebody that I continue to strive to be more like, and he's Cal.
Thank you very much. You're too sweet. Oh, I got to click my timer. Did you click your timer?
I did. I'm on it.
Okay. Hey, I was just looking at the National Guild of Hypnotists Journal of Hypnotism. And I tell you what, one of the coolest things that's going on in this most current journal edition. Hey, if you're not an NGH member, you got to be an NGH member. They're only the, you know, in my opinion, well, not even my opinion, objectively, perfectly objectively, the greatest hypnosis organization in the world. They're certainly the friendliest. Their whole idea is to bring hypnotherapists and hypnotists from different camps, different perspectives together in a way where we can all get along. Now, I'm looking at here at the, because of my secret project that you hear me rambling about all the time, I had to leave and wasn't there for the full convention. So I was excited that in this particular issue, they have the awards. And I'm just going to congratulate a few people who received awards. And one of my favorite guys, Reverend Scott Giles, he got the service award for working with the, what is the, NFH 104 Service Award. And I'm trying to think of what the proper word for that is. Do you know what that is?
I don't.
I think it has to do with working with the union. But Scott Giles does much more than that. He's really the kind of the political legal liaison for the National Guild. I work with him on the ethics committee, and he's a real top-notch guy. President's Award went to Dorothy Kersner and Lawrence Galante. Congratulations. And another good buddy of mine, Reverend William Mitchell. He got the William N. Curtis Religion and Hypnosis Award. Really top-notch guy. The NGH Chapter of the Year went to New Jersey, and accepting the award was John Gatto. Special Recognition Award went to Colonel Larry Ellman. And International Visionary Award went to Maurice Kershaw, who does a lot of the international stuff. And Orman McGill Award went to Timothy Shure, and that's a very special award. It's for really being an excellent presenter. And then the Charles Tebbets Award went to Michael Elner. And the Rexford L. North Award, which is really like one of the top awards that you get from the National Guild of Hypnotists, went to Jacob Bimblish. Also, a Member of the Year Award, Ruth and Daniel Carr. Hypnotism Achievement Award went to Charlene Ackerman. And Hypnotist Hallmark Award went to Marilyn Gordon. I love Marilyn Gordon. She's just a wonderful person. And also a whole bunch of new inductees into the Order of Braid. And I just wanted to say, right on, you guys. This is one of the things that makes the National Guild head and shoulders above any other organization that I know in the profession, at least that's centered in the United States. Maybe the UK is different or Australia is different. I can't attest for them. But they, the leadership, there's Dr. Dwight Damon, who is the president, but then all, he's put together such an advisory board, such a team, the ethics team, and I just am so grateful to the leadership that Dr. Damon has provided. For example, putting together the Journal of Hypnotism, all the big leaders in the profession that you really want to read from are writing for this journal, and I've been fortunate to be able to write for this journal. I don't know, it's been about 7 or 8 years, and it's really an honor. All right, what do you think of that, Meredith?
I think it's great. I strive to write for the journal one day.
Hey, you guys out there, if you've let your membership lapse, you want to get in there and you want to renew your membership, you can start getting the journal. And also, you want to think about joining the union, and just go to ngh.net. Get the contact information, go there. I don't know about anyone in the world that does more to protect your right and ability to practice than the National Guild of Hypnotists and the Hypnotist Union, which is supported by the National Guild of Hypnotists. All right. I'm going to make a couple of quick announcements and we'll get rolling along. Let's see. Week of Power. November, second week of November, I'm going to take you, certified hypnotist, to the next level, show you how to be one percenters. You're going to get 5-path and 7-path. We're scheduling classes for next year. I'm probably going to have that posted on the blog even before you watch this video. And then, of course, we had the big announcement, and that is I'm going to Malaysia and Singapore. Singapore, I'm going to be doing the Ultimate Recognitions classes. You 7th Pathers out there, you know what that's about. And also in Malaysia, I'm going to be doing the full NGH-approved hypnosis certification Banyan Super Course of 5-path and 7-path, and that's going to happen in Johor Bahru. And that's scheduled for January 18th to the 29th with the weekend off. If there's any changes to that, we'll post it here on calbanyan.com. Remember to fan us, be a fan, or follow us on facebook.com/hypnosis etc. That's HypnosisEtc. You get all the inside scoop of what's going on. And I mean, even Meredith is a member of Facebook now. I mean, even those very cautious professional people are doing that. And then also follow me on twitter.com, twitter.com/CalBanyan. Also join our hypnospace.com. Get in on the conversation. Remember to keep suggesting to us the case histories you'd like us to do, and that is with the dead celebs and stuff like that. Okay, back to you, Meredith. Tell us where we left off from the last episode with all this how to use hypnosis to help people with eating disorders series that we're doing.
All right. Well, I've given a case study. I've been talking about kind of just the more broad, general information about eating disorders, what they are, and just giving you some information about, you know, who they are, the kind of typical characteristics of somebody with eating disorders. And so today I'm going to start to get into a little bit more of the nitty-gritty, some of the common issues at the heart of eating disorders, some of the potential causes, as well as some things to keep in mind when working with people with eating disorders, some things I do when I work with them. And we will be also taking a question today because we did get some great questions. We want to be sure to get some of those answered. So I'm going to, you know, head right into it. Are you ready, Cal?
I'm so ready. I can't stand it.
Beautiful. Well, now, the simplest answer as far as what is really at the root or at the cause of an, you know, what is the cause of an eating disorder, it's ultimately a distractor from a feeling inside you don't like. And so getting back to the secret language of feelings, please do watch previous episodes because we get into that a little bit more. And you can also go to secretlanguageoffeelings.com.
Yes, I'm going to give them a shortcut.
Okay.
TSLOF.com. TSLOF.com. That's kind of an acronym kind of thing for The Secret Language of Feelings. TSLOF.com. And you don't have to type so much.
Beautiful. And so essentially, there's a feeling inside that they don't like. They're looking for a distractor, food, hey, or restricting food, eating a lot of it, throwing it up. Great. What better distractor for somebody, you know, who's bright and inventive and food is a easy choice. And so that's really the simple answer. But there are some more details that we can get into about that. Ultimately, at the heart of eating disorders is control. And essentially, it's the feeling that the client, or the thought that the client is not in control, and that somehow they are not in control of their world, of their freedom, of their ability to express themselves, of their ability to be understood, of their ability to be loved, all kinds of different ways that the lack of control, the feeling of being out of control, can express. But when someone feels out of control, and food is a regular everyday thing that you have to deal with, what better way to feel like you're in control than modifying food and your body? And that's kind of how eating disorders start. And then the ironic thing is that, of course, what happens is they get out of control. After a while, the restricting gets to the point where, you know, they become so malnourished that they can't think straight, and they start to have health problems. Or if they're binging and purging, they can't control their weight properly. They think that by vomiting or by over-exercising, they're going to be able to control the calories that they're binging on, and ultimately they can't. Most bulimics are 10 to 15 pounds overweight, and so they're kind of working against themselves. And so it's just really ironic thing, trying to get in control but ultimately putting themselves out of control. And that's important to know that, and to integrate that kind of verbiage into your work with eating disorder clients. They need to recognize that they've kind of worked against themselves, and that this is no longer working for them. Often eating disorder issues run in families, and so people in the field of psychology tend to believe that it is a hereditary kind of thing. It's really more my belief that it's socially learned, and it's less heredity actually being biologically ingrained into people, and I believe it's really much more patterned in families. And so you'll often find other people, you know, mothers, grandmothers, sometimes even fathers, having very much the same behaviors. And so it tends to be very much a familial issue. And if you're dealing with a teenager or a child, it's really important to try to involve at least one of the parents in the process. And if you have an idea of which parent is the one that's more challenged, and oftentimes the child will tell you, then it's a good idea to talk to them. And I try as much as I can to require it when I work with young people. If it's an adult, of course, you know, you're not going to be able to have that. But you want to work with the environmental issues and try to set them up for success as much as you can. We are impacted by our environment. And so if a person is surrounded by other people who are engaging in similar behaviors, it's going to make it harder for them to shift out of that space. Cal, I'm going to break just to see if you have anything to add so far.
Well, you know, I think that one of the things is we help them understand, help everyone who's listening and watching understand the difference between your thesis that underneath every eating disorder is this thought that they don't have control, and the thesis of 5-PATH that we have to be very careful of not deciding what the cause of the problem is until we've done the work with them.
So how do those correlate together?
Yeah.
Okay. Ultimately, it's just something that I'm asking you to keep in the back of your mind. And what you'll find as you start to explore, keeping an open mind, knowing that the client is going to guide you to where they need you to go to help them and to help themselves in informing child technique, it's just important to know that that is usually at the forefront. And not everybody has the words to use. And so if you have kind of a broad understanding, then you can kind of extrapolate from what it is that they're sharing with you to see ultimately this is about wanting to be on top of things. And so what we do as hypnotherapists is we try to give clients what they want. We try to, you know, when we do the direct suggestion work, we try to listen very carefully to what it is that are their goals and their passions in life, and then integrate that in to be successful. And if you already know that being in control of their their world is an issue, you can help to use that verbiage, looking for the verbiage in their own talk, and then integrating that in. Does that make sense, Cal?
Excellent.
Beautiful. Now, typically the parental dynamic that you'll find with people with eating disorders, and of course this is still an issue with adults because lots of adults are walking out there, rocking around out there like big kids. You know, this is one of the reasons why we do something like Five Path, is because we resolve all of these misperceptions that started when they were still kids, that people don't realize are still driving their behavior. But typically what happens is there's one parent, and it's usually the mother, is particularly overbearing, and the father is typically distant. Now that can be flipped at times, but there's usually one parent that's overbearing, overly critical. Well, critical, you know, what's too critical? I mean, critical is bad enough, right? And overbearing. And so thus is typically where this need to be in control kind of not necessarily starts, but where it's perpetuated, is by this feeling kind of held back and controlled by one parent. And then the kind of desire to get the attention of the other parent. And so partially the eating disorder is often a kind of a scream for help, a cry for help. Have you experienced any of that, Cal?
You know, for me, it's not been that consistent. It just really seems like it's, you know, I work with the SSEs, which is the subsequent sensitizing events, taking me back to the ISC, and just personally, I see a little bit wider variety of causal issues, and that can spring this up. So,
well, there is, but you know, I'm not going to do a segment just saying, you know, all kinds of things could happen, and so I'm trying to give people, you know, an idea of what they might find as far as what the kind of typical textbook kind of experience might be. Now, you're absolutely right. There are a lot of variations on what I'm sharing right now, but I'm just trying, you know, just like not everybody who has an eating disorder is depressed. You know, not everybody who has an eating disorder is a self-mutilator, but there are certainly a significant percentage that are, and so I'm trying to kind of give people just some ideas.
Yeah, it's a tendency that I think that psychologists and psychiatrists will see as a general trend, and certainly I'm trying to think that a way to say that the group of people who write the DSM-4 is a larger group of a larger sampling than what I've seen, and so they have to generalize, you know, plus or minus one standard deviation kind of stuff, and give some general guidelines. And I'm just saying that in my experience, which is a lot smaller end, you know, it's not thousands and thousands of bulimics and that kind of thing, that they seem to be more all over the board. And also, the population that the hypnotherapist sees is not a random selection of people. They are people that here's a technical word, kiddies, close your ears, the creme de la crap, and that is the worst of the worst. And I think that because of the group that we see are the ones that other professionals have not been successful with, the other professionals will be more successful with the most common profiles, because that's what they're trained to work with. But those people who don't fall within the generalities and the common profiles, then those other professionals are going to be more at a loss to be successful. And so I think that's my hypothesis of why my experience as hypnotherapist, that there tends to not fall into the categories that are written up in these diagnostics manuals. Does that kind of make sense?
It does make sense. And I'm not getting this information from what's written in the manuals. This is information from my experience in working with large numbers of adolescents predominantly, but some adults with eating disorders prior to coming in to using hypnosis. I definitely found these to be consistently, but not always, true. And as I work with hypnosis, I mean, it really is a different vantage point. And I am, as I dig down deep, because on the surface it might seem like these are the big factors, as I dig down deep doing age regression and such, I find that there are a lot of other factors that are more prevalent. you know, but I'm just trying to give people kind of a basis of what you might tend to experience or see, just so that people aren't really surprised. Now, certainly you may have something that doesn't happen like this at all, and don't be surprised if it's a whole different experience for you. Did you have anything else to add to that, Cal?
I'm totally okay with that.
Okay. Now, as far as sexual abuse goes, I mentioned this in a previous segment, and I want to mention again that it's, you know, always important as a hypnotherapist that you're prepared to deal with sexual abuse if it comes up. Since we don't know what we're going to find in age regression with any client, I mean, it can be any issue at all where you find that coming up for you. Just like with any client, you find dark force entities or attachment issues coming up for you, and we need as hypnotherapists to be prepared to deal with these issues. And I find both sometimes with eating disorders, and definitely not as the rule. And so it's important also to know that it's because of the lack of self-esteem that sometimes I find, especially the girls, have gotten themselves into situations where after the disorder was already in full effect, they ended up having some sort of a date rape situation, or were molested, or something happened where they didn't feel capable of saying no. And so it's kind of a secondary issue that you might have to be prepared to deal with in part of the process. Now, getting a little bit further into actually working with people with eating disorders, one big thing to keep in mind is, you know, like anything else, you're going to have a different level of motivation when you're working with somebody that a spouse or a parent is sending to you than if they're choosing to come to you yourself, you know, themselves. And it's, you know, you're typically going to have a little bit more of a challenge working with especially a child who has no choice in the matter whatsoever, who's being sent to you by a parent and doesn't particularly want to be there. And sometimes with cases like that, you're going to have to, after you've informed the parent in front of the child that it will be fully confidential, everything that you discuss, and after the parent leaves the room, you will want to then find out what it is that the child really wants. And you may have to use kind of a backdoor approach, working to give them, of course, if they're, you know, 15 to 20 pounds underweight and they're wanting to lose weight, that is not something that you would want to comply with. But if you can find something that you feel, ethically speaking, is acceptable for you to work with them, then you might want to start working on that and see how the clarity of the process helps their issue. Does that make sense to you, Cal?
I think you're wording that really well.
Okay, beautiful. And then you're going to have clients, you know, like my 47-year-old case history that I mentioned last segment. You know, she was highly motivated. She had had an eating disorder, bulimia, for 27 years, and she was done. And so you will get clients like that that just really want to stop. They just know they can't on their own. They've tried practically everything else out there, and they're ready. And, you know, we can really get through a process like 5-PATH very quickly with somebody like that. Now, one thing to know about people with eating disorders is that there's a lot of guilt and shame. And because of that, they can be very manipulative and very sneaky and secretive. And also because they tend to be people pleasers, they might just tell you what they think you want to hear. And so it's just important to be aware as their hypnotherapist that they may very well be trying to pull the wool over your eyes. And just like Cal teaches, with any client, we don't believe them what they say that the cause of the problem is. We let age regression reveal that to us. And it's no different with these clients. You know, you listen and you hear it, and just be prepared that if you ask them questions about their behaviors, they may not be fully honest about how often they've binge and purge since last session, or, you know, about their restricting. And so, you know, just be prepared for that. Certainly not meant to be malicious. It's just a matter of knowing that a lot of their behaviors are not societally acceptable, especially bulimics. There's so much shame about that and their behaviors that they're embarrassed. And so one of the biggest, most important things when working with these clients is to build rapport, you know, to really connect with these people. And, you know, part of that is just listening and then sharing back with them what they have stated so that they know that you understand. And And it's about, you know, showing them that you are working with them, that you are a team, and that you're not going to be the food police, but that you are on their side, helping them on a journey to get, you know, to a place of resolution for this eating disorder. Anything you want to add to that, Cal?
Yeah, I think that, you know, really getting that into their head that you and that the hypnotherapist and the client are working together, the team, to work against this problem, and that, you know, we have this, you know, positive, unconditional regard for the individual, and the problem is separate from the person, and that we are going to work together on overcoming that problem. And one of the things we talked about in between the shows was, you know, is there any special challenges? I have a couple notes here with regard to, you know, creating trust or establishing yourself as an expert or somebody that cares. And I'm wondering, is there anything you want to add to that? And then maybe I can add a couple things too.
Well, you know, given my background, you know, it's easy for me to establish that because I do have a great deal of experience in it. But, you know, I often will, which I would not have as a psychotherapist, I often will reveal, just a little bit, not a lot, to clients that, you know, I myself have battled, you know, with some of the similar things, and that I really am coming from a place of understanding and not of judgment. And, you know, given that I have the experience I do with eating disorders, it's relatively easy to, you know, for them to see that I've pretty much heard it all, and that there's nothing that they're going to tell me where I'm going to judge them or think negatively about them in any way. But just, you know, showing a general sense of warmth, which you would with any client, and understanding and hearing them fully is really the key, no matter what.
Excellent. And for you folks out there, you know, who are hypnotists and hypnotherapists that don't have master's degrees or a lot of background in working with this, one of the things you can do is when these people come to your office in that pre-hypnosis interview time, is to really, like we're talking about, just listen, don't make any negative judgments, and really, when they talk, they might ask you a question, how is hypnosis going to be able to help me after nobody else has been able to help me? And I says, and that's where you can start talking about, well, we're really the only profession that deals directly with the subconscious and unconscious mind. And that's really where these behaviors are coming from. They're coming out of emotion, and they're coming out of habit. And from the hypnotist's perspective, there's really no difference between this kind of behavior and eating too much, drinking too much, smoking too much, any kind of habit. And so I feel quite confident that if you're willing to follow my instructions, you know, go through the process we're going to go through, that I'm going to be able to help you. And that really has been all I really needed to say, other than just being with them and showing that positive, unconditional regard. And with that much, they're willing to give it a shot to move forward. And then in a session or two, I think you're going to surprise them. I know five pathers were, well, people use five path, and those who don't, you've got to have a system where you're going to be able to take people into deep levels of hypnosis to be successful with this. And you've got, as a very, very minimum, to be able to do excellent age regression and age progression work so that you can get to the ISE. And one thing we haven't really talked about too much is the SPE, the symptom producing event, because one of the things that will trip you up, even if you're an excellent age regression hypnotist, is that the ISE is probably going to have absolutely nothing to do with food. It has to do with creating fear. It has to do with a time when they have some other feeling inside them they don't like. It might be anger or guilt. And then somewhere along the line, they figure out that they can, in a way, self-medicate through eating. And eating is kind of a double whammy in that both they behaviorally, they're taking their attention away from the feeling that they don't like to something that's external, and that is this food, and then the behavior of eating it and that kind of thing. And then also some foods, particularly like carbohydrates and stuff like that, have, after you've eaten it, have a calming effect, almost like alcohol or some drugs, and they relax and feel comforted. We've heard this, the idea of comfort food and that kind of thing. So yeah, one of the things that's important is to get the ISE and also the SPE, the symptom producing event. And I think we'll have to get into that more in the next episode. What do you think there, Meredith?
Yeah, I was going to try to get to a question today, but I think we're running very short on time, Cal.
Well, it's such a big topic.
Yes, it is.
Hey, you guys, please forgive me. We sent out I sent out a tweet, and I sent out a Facebook message, and I sent out a message to one of our Yahoo groups. Send in questions and stuff like that. And we've got some questions. We will get to them. But there's just this topic is so big and so important that we've been using up more than the allotted time just to get through the material we have gotten through so far. So we will get to your questions as soon as this topic is over. We might squeeze one in next episode. All right, Meredith, wrap it up.
All right, thank you all so much for tuning in. This is a really important issue. People are really so out of control with eating in general these days, and it's fun to be able to bring you this information so that you can change lives. Please check out my website, yourpathhypnosis.com. Please do continue to send in your questions, feedback, comments, all of that. We really appreciate it. Meredith Locker signing off.
And your website?
I shared it, Cal.
Oh, see how I am? Such a big day today. All this information swimming around in my head. All right, this is Cal Banyan. Please keep sending in your suggestions about the celebrity you'd like us to kind of hypnoanalyze and go through a case history with. And also check out our brand new distance learning hypnosis certification course, basic to advanced. I think you're going to be very excited about that. It is a big hit. Also, keep following us on Twitter. Become a fan on facebook.com/hypnosis, etc. And visit my websites at hypnosiscenter.com. That's where my hypnosis schedule is. Check out the schedule for this next year. Maybe we can get together. It'd be so fun to have you in class. And then hypnosis.org, you can get a listing in our directory. There's all kinds of other resources there as well. And hypnospace.com, get in on the conversation. Lots of hypnosis groups. See you there. Cal Banyan, signing off. This recording is the property of Cal Banyan and Cal Banyan's Banyan Publishing Incorporated. All rights reserved, for private use only, may not be duplicated without written permission.